You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
Up next on today's Wine Country Live, we are going to take a look at a problem that has, like some things in our world, only gotten worse, although it's taken a different shape and form since the beginning of the pandemic. We're going to talk with one of the authors of a new book called No Way Home, The Crisis of Homelessness and How to Fix It with Intelligence and Humanity. And joining me now via telephone is Dr. Wayne Weingarten, who is one of four people who put this book together. Dr. Weingarten, welcome into the show.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. You are a fellow with an organization called PRI. Tell our listeners what that organization is and all about.
Absolutely. The PRI stands for the Pacific Research Institute. We're a free market think tank that, you know, we look at pressing public policy issues and try to come up with solutions that will, address the problems and promote prosperity and all the good things that come with that.
Mm-hmm. And is PRI a partisan organization?
It is absolutely nonpartisan.
Very good. And Dr. Weingarten has written things you might have seen in the Wall Street Journal, Chicago Tribune, Investors Business Daily, Forbes, USA Today. Your focus is on business and economics. And so your portion of this book is directed in that fashion, right?
Yes. No, we wanted to address it from a multidimensional kind of legal, social, and my contribution, being an economist, was really looking at how economics and the situational homeless, how that part of the problem is driven by policies in California, and then regarding legal issues, and then social policies, how all of this together is fostering the crisis that we see all around us.
Yeah. As I was saying in the intro, we had a massive problem before the pandemic. It certainly has not gone away. It's just taking a different form. City of San Francisco is a good example where they used hotel rooms and took a lot of people off the streets. But now, recently last week, I saw a story about what do we do now? Eventually, you're going to take those people out of those hotel rooms, so you're right back where you started. What does your research and work and your colleagues' work tell us about how this all began? Is there an understanding of what started this process that's led to the crisis we have now?
Yeah, it's really a perfect storm where you had affordability in California started getting worse around 2014, which is when the crisis started kind of germinating. You know, prior to 2014, since we had the mortgage crisis back in 2008, homelessness was going down nationally and it was going down in California. But at around that 2014 time, that's when the problem started really getting bad in California. Meanwhile, the rest of the U.S. kept on improving. And that was the time that affordability of housing and started getting worse. That's the time that we started making social policy changes that made it easier to be homeless and created a right to live on the street. So right around that time, we saw both social and economic policy changes that just made the crisis worse.
Hmm. So is it correct to suggest that it was economics that got it started, but those other things that made it worse?
You know, we don't have complete agreement amongst all four authors. I would lean toward that view, yes. I think Chris might say that the economics plays a more minor role in that drug addiction and mental illness and the way we have, in effect, deinstitutionalized. You know, he would emphasize that greater. But I think what we all agree with is you need to address each one. So whether economics is the major or the minor, there are people who are situationally homeless. And we need a holistic solution that addresses the causes driving their homelessness, which needs to differ from what's driving people who have substance abuse issues. Or many of those with substance abuse also have mental illness. And so, you know, we need programs that holistically address that. I mean, ironically, you know, while we need homes and shelters and houses of to help people, that's not the driving factor. So only putting somebody in a hotel room, that doesn't address the problem, because if they're suffering with mental illness or suffering from substance abuse problems, or don't have the job skills, the ability to get a job, you're not going to sustainably solve the problem by just putting somebody in a home.
Yeah. And for the benefit of our listeners, when you take a look at this book, it's unique in that it has four authors. Our guest is one of the four, and sort of alternating chapters through the book that come at this from different perspectives, which, like most difficult problems, it's not one thing. It's many things that you just described that contributed to the problem and would also contribute to a solution. What, in your view, has changed because of the pandemic, other aspects? Do we have more people on the streets than we would have had? Are they being treated differently? Are we more aware, less aware of the problem now? What are your thoughts on the last year?
You know, the last year certainly didn't help. I mean, it didn't help in so many different areas. You know, one concern long term is the last year we've wasted a lot of money. And so, you know, how are those resources impact in the future, because we're not sustainably addressing the problem. And so, you know, all the money we spent, and mind you, over the past 3 years, California spent $13 billion on this problem, or $30,000 per homeless person, or around that level. But since we're not solving it, it's just something that's being pushed off into the next year. And so we really are exacerbating the problem, because we're not helping people off of the streets sustainably, nor are we, you know, budget-wise, you know, it's becoming a greater and greater burden. And then we're seeing the burden on the community increase. We're seeing the economic consequences increase. So we're continually spiraling up in terms of the crisis, and that we need a different approach if we want a different outcome.
Yeah. So let's talk some about that different approach. The value of this kind of research and study is to come to some conclusions about what might make a difference. What is that answer from this book, No Way Home?
One of the answers is that, and it must be many things, we need to rely on private nonprofits much for delivering programs, much more than the government programs. And we go through several examples in the book where you have greater innovation in how we can holistically address the problem coming from the private nonprofits. They tend to be much more flexible, much more innovative. And so we need a greater use of those services to help the homeless address the issues that they're struggling with. So there's a great one out in Vienna, Virginia, which is called Shelters to Shutters. And what their approach is, for those who are situationally homeless, they partner with businesses to get people jobs that support, you know, and get the job skills, so that now they're sustainably kind of off of the streets, and they actually have a means to, you know, get back into kind of get the life back on track. That type of innovation is exactly what we need in California, and that type of holistic thought process. There's another example where the organization, this one's in Tennessee, where they actually use day rooms as a means to connect with homeless people. So you're providing services that someone could use, showers, internet access, bag storage. But that interaction becomes an opportunity to address their issues. And if they're struggling with substance abuse, hopefully connect them with services that can help them. And one of the things we talk about in the book, for some people, and again, this is a multi-dimensional problem, so not one problem fits all, but for some people, there's family that's available. And so reconnecting people with their family, you know, through this type of positive interaction could help others get off the street. So it's, you know, using that kind of positive incentive to connect people with the resources that can help them kind of turn their lives around. And again, that reduces the stress in the community, reduces the economic costs. So it's really a win-win type of environment.
Mm-hmm. There's a portion of this that is addressed by one of your co-authors, the gentleman who is a lawyer focused on the constitutional and legal components. And every conversation that I have about this comes back to that legal issue, the constitutional issue, that is a relatively recent development about how you have a right in California to essentially live on the banks of the river. That in and of itself to me seems like the nut that has to be cracked before anything else is going to work. Can you speak to that? I know that's not your portion of the book, but can you speak to that decision that was made in the courts that led us to that position?
Yeah, absolutely. And I learned so much from Joseph on this. And you're talking about the Boise decision in the Ninth Circuit. What it's essentially said is sleep is a basic human function. And if I don't have a home and you enforce the vagrancy laws, things of that nature, you're actually denying me of that kind of basic human function, a human right, if there's not a bed for me to go to. If you can't ensure that there is a bed for me to sleep, you're violating that right by enforcing the law. And of course, especially for somebody, a law enforcement officer on the street, how can you know whether or not there's a bed available? So that tension has been resolved by essentially creating this right to live on the street. And that impacts not just California, but the entire Ninth Circuit. So Portland, Oregon, Seattle, I mean, all these places are struggling under the same kind of changing legal precedent. And Joseph does a wonderful job tracing kind of how legally homelessness and vagrancy has been addressed going back hundreds of years, and how, back then it really was excessive and almost inhumane, but we've kind of come to a point where we're actually creating a right to a destructive lifestyle, which, in our view, is not really a humane way of dealing with the issue as well. So that legal precedent, like you said, is an obstacle, because if somebody wants to be on the street, you really don't have a means to enforce laws that would force them not to be on the street. And sometimes that negative, we were talking about positive incentives earlier, that negative incentive, enforcing that stick, can be the means where somebody then goes to seek services to address substance abuse, for instance. So we're actually taking that away by providing that right to live on the street. But you're also then creating an environment where it's okay that a community on the street that has drugs rampant, that has violence and sexual abuse and diseases. I mean, typhus and other medieval diseases keep coming back because of the human waste that comes from this. So, and we're, in effect, the law is protecting that. And so that is an obstacle. Ideally, that would be reversed, or another jurisdiction would rule against that so that you could then move the decision up to the Supreme Court. But right now, that is an obstacle that makes it more difficult to address the problem, but it is the environment that we're in. So even though it makes things more difficult, it's something that is an obstacle, but it can't be something that prevents us from addressing the problem.
Couldn't agree with you more on that. It just seems like a form of madness that we have created, and especially in this sort of, as is often the case with tough issues, there's a clash of rights. If you say that a person has a right to live alongside the river trail here in Napa, as just one of many examples, don't people also have an equal right not to have the natural resources polluted by the waste that's created in that situation, and unregulated, untreated wastewater and human waste of all kinds and whatnot, and trash and other things. The clash of rights, or for an example in San Francisco, someone has a right to live on the street, but don't I have a right to walk down that street without dodging excrement as I go there? These are issues just like, gun control is another good example, where we end up in sort of intractable positions. How do we break that logjam?
Well, I think part of it is being willing to struggle with those difficult issues and be willing to say that there is a conflict of rights, that I have a right to use public property. I mean, that is why we've created the park, so the public has access to it. So when you allow a homeless community to take it over and deny use to others, be willing to address that and ask difficult issues. Other difficult issues we have to ask is, if you have somebody who is suffering with mental illness and isn't in a position to make a rational decision for themselves, Are we willing to, in effect, force them into a institution that could help them? Mm-hmm. And they're, again, conflicting rights. And so a lot of it is willing to ask the difficult questions and deal with it in a reasonable way, and not in this absolutist kind of concept of, I have a right to usurp public property, and not willing to challenge that.
Yeah, and I understand the compassionate nature, the feeling of compassion some people have, leave them alone. If they want to be that way, everybody has a right to live their life the way they want to choose. But I don't think it's compassionate to let people suffer, whether they're freezing cold, trying to be the working class homeless that we know about now. That's not fair. If you're suffering from mental illness or addiction, you're not being compassionate to that person just to ignore them and walk on by. I've never quite understood that concept. And yet, as you mentioned, we have a checkered past in how those people would have been treated, sent to the poorhouse or the work farm and so on. And we don't want that, but there's got to be some place in the middle between those extremes.
And that's one of the points that we make in the book, that is not a humane way of dealing with the situation, just allowing people to suffer on the streets. That's not a humane way of dealing with it. It's not fair to the community to say somebody who wants to voluntarily live on the street to allow them to take over parks and riverfronts and things of that nature. That's not fair to the community.
Right.
But also the idea that when you're talking about somebody who is homeless and is suffering, it's just not humane to allow them to live on the street. And when we talk about deinstitutionalization, this is something that Chris gets into in the book, which I think is a really, he's asking really important questions, because he's saying we've deinstitutionalized. We have a lot fewer beds for people with mental illness. And the whole idea of, the movie One Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right, in everyone's minds. But we are institutionalizing people. We're just using the jails and the streets as the institution. And so that, there's a lot of problems with that as well. So that, again, it's not a humane solution.
Yeah. Fantastic conversation. And the book, again, is called No Way Home. Our guest here, Dr. Wayne Weingarten, one of four authors, the subtitle, The Crisis of Homelessness and How to Fix It with Intelligence and Humanity. The publisher is Encounter. And our guest is a member of PRI, the Pacific Research Institute. Very enjoyable to talk about a tough subject with you. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Take care. Have a good day.
You too.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.